So our next guest on the program is, for my money, the best in the business when it comes to talking about fantasy baseball. He writes for The Athletic and is also the host of the wonderful podcast You, Me, and an Album. Always a pleasure to welcome back Al Melchior. Hello there, Al.
Hello there, Rich. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. It's good to be thinking about and talking about real baseball. I wasn't sure if that would happen a couple of weeks ago.
I will be very honest. Like a week ago, I would have absolutely predicted that we would not be having this conversation right now. So I'm very, very pleasantly surprised and happy that we are having this and able to talk about real baseball and fantasy baseball.
Well, let's start with some of the recent moves here. The big news today, Freddie Freeman going to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Does that shift in ballparks affect him much one way or the other?
I don't think so, mostly just because he's Freddie Freeman. And I actually, Rich, just finished literally like a minute before coming on here, finished writing a column about players on bad teams who have good fantasy value regardless of that. And Freddie Freeman used to be that player once upon a time. It's sort of hard to remember Atlanta not being a good team, but a few years ago they weren't a good team. And he still produced a lot of runs and hit for a great average and hit for good power. And he's even a better player now. So, obviously, it's a great landing spot for him. I suppose if there's any way to give him an up arrow because of that lineup he's in, he deserves it. But he and Vlad Guerrero Jr. were the top two first basemen in fantasy drafts up to this point. There's an absolute consensus on that. I don't think that changes.
Big signing yesterday by the Cubs, getting the talented outfielder from the Japanese league, Seiya Suzuki. How do we try and get those stats he put up in Japan to translate to Wrigley Field?
Yeah, that's always a tricky thing. A tool that I use, make liberal use of, is on the site Fangraphs. There's a range of different projections that are there, and it gives you a good idea. I mean, these projections are very well thought out and well founded. What's kind of interesting with Suzuki's projections is that there's, as you would expect, with a player just about to make his debut in Major League Baseball, there's not as much consensus as you would normally see. So we've got one projection system that has him for 22 homers, other projections that have him just for 10. So that just speaks to the difficulty of trying to understand how those stats are going to translate into Major League Baseball. So you do your best. I tend to be cautious with this. I'd rather go with more known quantities than take the risk of drafting for the upside of those projections. And that's not, by the way, not just for players coming from overseas, but just in general, players with injury risk or for whatever reason, players that represent a lot of variance coming into a season. I would rather get those players if they fall in the draft than reach and assume the best for them.
I want to ask you about a specific position here, and that's the catcher spot. First of all, do you subscribe to the theory of position scarcity, that if you can get some numbers at a position like catcher where there's not a great deal of talent, is it worth overspending, drafting a little early at that spot?
I'm generally a really big subscriber to that theory, Rich. I would say recent years, not even like the last 2-3 years, but probably, I don't know, maybe even the last like 8 years or so, I've made an exception to catcher because there's such a prevalent attitude that even though every single year there's scarcity at catcher, that people wait on catchers. I'd gotten burned for a time being too rigid with position scarcity, not reading the room, and going for catchers too early. And so this year has been interesting because Sal Perez last year lapped the field. He had almost double the fantasy value of the second best catcher, who was Will Smith last year, at least in terms of roto formats. So people see that extreme scarcity that he was a tier of one player who was so far ahead of everybody else that people are scrambling to get him. And in my most recent draft, I took Salvador Perez in the third round. So taken to an extreme, I will pursue that strategy with catchers, particularly with this one catcher. But I am a little bit more loose with it at that position because I think there is, again, you have to understand the people you're drafting with, and usually the people I draft with aren't They just distrust catchers, and yeah, maybe for good reason, given the year-to-year variability that exists at that position for most players.
Now, I saw you wrote on The Athletic that there's a pretty significant drop-off somewhere right after Mitch Garver, but let me ask you about a couple of guys. What does the move to Minnesota do for Gary Sanchez?
I'm not sure that it really does much of anything. I mean, maybe Sanchez is a change of scenery player. That'll remain to be seen. Park factor wise, it's probably not a positive for Sanchez. I think lineup around him is a little bit of a downgrade, but I don't think it's really going to move the needle on him too much. And I think this is actually a great segue, Rich, from what I was just talking about, because Sanchez has had a lot of variability within his career. So I still hold out hope that we're going to see him bounce back to that level he had a few years ago, but I'm not banking on it. So that's what makes drafting a catcher tough, because he's not alone with that kind of profile. But I don't think that the move to Minnesota is necessarily going to be a big change. Maybe a little bit more playing time. I'm not sure what the strategy there is of thinking about Ryan Jeffers and working him into the mix, but I think Sanchez will get a lot of playing time if he stays healthy.
So I'm loaded with catchers in my keeper league. I don't know why, but I've got four of them. None of them are very good, but a couple of them are intriguing to me, and one is a guy who put up some good power numbers last year. I don't know that he can sustain much of an average. What are your thoughts on the Tigers' Eric Haas?
Yeah, he's interesting. And this is an interesting pair of catchers to put next to each other in the discussion, because the way I've approached it is that when we're getting around to the point where it looks like Sanchez is going to go, and looking at his ADP, and right now I'm looking at his ADP for the month of March in NFBC drafts, it's 240. So Sanchez is going as a late rounder. So we're at that stage, and I'm looking for, say, my number two catcher, and I'm targeting Sanchez and that upside that he has. I'm thinking, okay, if Sanchez doesn't go, Eric Haas might not be that much worse than Gary Sanchez, but he's going quite a bit later. So that's how I'm viewing Eric Haas. We had one out of nowhere breakout season last year from him. I don't think very many people are expecting him to repeat that, but he has shown the ability to hit for power and have some value. So at that point in the draft, that's worth something. And if Sanchez is gone, then Haas is right there up near the top of my draft queue.
We're talking with Al Melchior here on Downtown. Who are some pitchers to keep an eye on, Al, that might be ready to take their game to the next level this season?
Well, there is one, and this is kind of going a little bit deep, but somebody that I think I've drafted in literally every draft so far is Brady Singer. And he's somebody that I actually just wrote about in that column that I was mentioning a little bit earlier about players who could do very well despite not necessarily having a great team around them. But when you look at peripheral stats, you're not just looking at the surface stats, like what a pitcher's ERA was last season, or their WHIP, or what their one loss record was, and you look at how many swings and misses do they get, how many at what rate do they freeze batters on a called strike, how good are they at preventing hard contact, particularly those latter two. Those are metrics that Brady Singer has scored really well on in both of his two seasons. So he's a guy that I'll probably just be getting over and over again in the later rounds. And I guess I might as well just preview this whole column, because another pitcher I wrote about was Cal Quantrill, and he had a phenomenal second half last
year.
Yes,
he did, yeah.
I have to admit, Rich, at the time, I did not buy into it. He didn't strand very many runners. You look at those kinds of things that you think might indicate some really good luck, and it looked completely fluky. But Quantrill was striking out more batters. He was getting more swings and misses. And he was, again, this is a really kind of strange metric to look at, but it's one that I look at that sometimes helps me to find players that other people overlook, which is looking at the launch angle of batted balls that they allowed. Mm. And nobody allowed higher fly balls in the second half last season than Cal Quantrill did. So with the uptick in the strikeouts, he's getting a lot of easy fly ball outs. He did this over a three-month period, so who knows if he can sustain that going into 2022. But as a pitcher who's barely inside the top 300 in terms of ADP, that's another late-round target for me, just like Brady Singer.
Back to my team. I've got a young guy I snagged late in the draft last year. He came up a little bit at the end of the season for the Twins and looked pretty good. What are your thoughts on the potential for Joe Ryan?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Bailey Ober, because he's another one of my
favorites. Oh, I like Bailey Ober, too, yes.
Joe Ryan, I mean, Joe Ryan definitely comes with a higher pedigree and a little bit more hype. So I think that's something that I sort of factor into this, is I think, you know, Joe Ryan could be very good this year. But the fact that he did make this tremendous debut with the Twins, frankly, I think better than a lot of people thought that he would, getting 30% strikeout rate, which is phenomenal. But I'm not sure that he'll be able to keep that up over a whole season. But for that reason, that he does come with these expectations and the hype, I have not drafted Joe Ryan yet, and yet I would be perfectly happy to have him. I think it's just a question of what the expectations are of the other managers in your league.
The closer position has become so volatile in recent years. So if anybody's going to draft a closer early or spend money on them in an auction, who are the couple of closers that you think are most likely to keep that job the entire season?
Yeah, maybe not that many this year. So closer's been interesting because you've got the big two that everybody feels very confident about, and that's Josh Hader and Liam Hendricks. But, you know, once you do get past that top tier, you get past those two, Edwin Diaz, Ryan Presley, get a little bit further down. Somebody that I really like a lot is Taylor Rogers. And for some reason, he's been sort of overlooked in drafts, and I don't know. Yeah.
Is that because he's a lefty, you think?
I don't think so. I think maybe if you went back a couple of years, I think that's something people would have been concerned about. But when he has been in high leverage, and particularly in a closing position as long as he has been, I'd be surprised that people would still be worried about, oh, well, he's going to go back to some kind of specialist role, the Twins really need him in a different role. I think it's just that, in terms of surface stats, he did have a little bit of an off season last year, but the skills didn't really diminish at all. So it's a bit of a mystery to me why he's not going a little bit higher and why he's not up there, you know, with the Edwin Diaz's and Ryan Presley's of the world. But I'm more than happy to wait on Rogers, and I've already wound up with him a couple of times and wouldn't be surprised to have him on another team or two.
Couple American League teams that have some interesting situations. Who do you think ends up as the Tigers' closer? Do they stick with Soto?
I think so. He did a pretty incredible job last year, and you look at the alternatives. Andrew Chapin's awfully good, but again, there's a case of that because he is a lefty. And Soto, if he were in the closer's role, that takes a lefty out of the mix. That works against Chapin. Michael Fulmer, I think, you know, it really kind of remains to be seen how he, first of all, how long he stays healthy and how well he performs over the longer haul in a relief role. Joe Jimenez, kind of buried on the depth chart there, was the closer of the future for a long time. Then he was the closer of the present and didn't do as well as people were hoping. Maybe he lurks in that picture, but I don't see any reason to think that anybody other than Soto starts the year in that role.
And in Seattle, Steckenrider racked up some saves last year, but his peripherals weren't great. And Paul Sewald kind of came out of nowhere and was lights out for them.
Yeah, I am really rooting for Paul Sewald. Like I said, fantastic peripherals, just has that closer profile. I think that this is a situation where it could be split a number of different ways. You got Ken Giles in that mix. You've got Castillo, who once upon a time was part of the mix with the Rays. So I could see the Mariners sharing the splitting the situation in enough different ways that it sort of ruins it for everybody. But I do think if it's a situation where one reliever can be elevated into that closer role and just run with it, I do think that Sewald's got the best chance to do that.
All right, Al, who's one prospect in each league that people should keep on their radar?
All right. Well, I would say somebody that I've been coming back to over and over is Alec Thomas, who's an outfielder in the Diamondback system, pretty close to the major leagues, appears to be, based on what he did in the minors last season, appears to be, if not ready, very, very close to ready. And that's just a situation where I think you've got the combination of a prospect who's got great tools, has displayed good performance at the upper levels, and is in an organization where there's going to be a clear opportunity to be ready to play. Certainly, Adley Rutschman. I mean, he's just recently injured, but I still think that he could be an impact player this year. Certainly, be excited to see Leo Rodriguez in the AL coming up with the Mariners. I'm not sure how soon that happens, but those are certainly a couple of names to talk aside.
Al, always great to talk baseball with you. I'm also so excited to see, and I'm not surprised at it, how well the podcast, You, Me, and an Album, is going for you.
Well, thank you so much, Rich, and you're a part of that. You were a guest. That was a really fun discussion. I think about a lot about Harry Nilsson, and yeah, I've been having a blast with it, so I appreciate you giving a little bit of air here. I've been fortunate to really have on so many great guests and talk about so many really interesting albums.
Yeah, if you're into music, you really should subscribe to it. You, Me, and an Album. And, of course, check out all of Al's great work at The Athletic. Al, thanks so much for being with us. As always, hope your teams have a great season, and we'll catch you again soon.
Thank you so much, Richard. Same to you.
Al Melchior with us on Downtown.